Hello, this is Dean Gocher. I'm founder and director of the Institution for Authority Research. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. Then He's the one who directs your paths. That's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And this program's about a process that holds those scriptures in contempt, actually wants to remove those scriptures, that way of thinking, from the face of the earth. Those scriptures, the Word of God, in fact, is built on a patriarchal structure of thought. Patriarch means simply top-down. God says, my ways are not your ways, neither your thoughts are my thoughts. As far as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. So therein, we find a right and wrong, or a contrast way of thinking. And that's called a paradigm, a way of thinking. And that's a deductive reasoning. In other words, you start with a premise and you use proper syllogism. The Apostle Paul would go, therefore, therefore, therefore. And then your outcome has to always match or be in agreement to the premise. And that's the scriptures we find when Jesus said, what my Father commands, that's what I do. Or he who does my Father's will in heaven is my brother, sister, and mother. And so we find this accountability to higher authority structure in a patriarchal paradigm. Now, the dialectic, or this process I call diaprax, simply to practice the dialectical way of thinking, is to negate or annihilate this top-down patriarchal system. In the last few programs, I've been covering Abraham Maslow and pointing out his agenda was to destroy a patriarchal paradigm. He's noted for his hierarchy of felt needs. It's not that these needs aren't apparent. They are. They're part of our life. You need water, food, sleep, exercise. You do need input from others. It's not good that man be alone. And you do need purpose in life. But the agenda is to make those temporal aspects of our life our foundation. Now, Jesus responded to Maslow's hierarchy of needs in the temptations with, it is written, it is written, it is written. And it is written, man doesn't live by bread alone. That's a Maslow hierarchy of felt needs. You need food. But by what? Every word which proceeds from the mouth of God. So objective truth comes to us not through the flesh, not through the creation, but from the Creator. And this is reflected beginning in the traditional home. As I've shared in prior programs, the child wants to relate with something in the environment that the parent has predetermined is incorrect relationship, in other words, writing on a wall or whatever it is, the child might find pleasurable to relate with. And the parent then comes into that child's life as an authority figure with force and with, as an author, a command, cannot. And those two things, coming into a temporal environment, is objective truth, external to human nature, external to human experience that man can universally relate with. So if you want to build a global society, you cannot build it on contrast. You cannot build it on a patriarchal system. That produces division. You have to change the way people think. So Marx said, once the earthly family, once this traditional family that chastens their children, uses physical force to get children under control. See, if they don't control themselves, the parent will control the flesh until they learn to control the flesh. And it produces a peaceful fruit of righteousness. It's grievous for a season because it's literally getting you off the love of the pleasure. Well, this program, I need to cover the rest of Abraham Maslow as quickly as I can. If you've listened to the other programs, I've covered quite a bit. But let me just simply proceed in his agenda. He said, as I shared last time, the first thing I do with authoritarians is break their backs immediately. I treat them like the bastards they are. Now, that would be just some crazy man out there with contempt for somebody else if it wasn't for the fact that he is foundation in training for management in workplace and in education curriculum. His name is known around the world, and he has laid out a platform, a humanistic platform, for every child in every college and institution to praxis the dialectical process. Now, Michael Ray, in Maslow's book, Maslow on Management, made this statement. He said, "This voice, which really isn't you," see, the parent's command, "but tells you the way the world works, is a direct attack upon creativity." So when God or the parent tells you not to do something that your natural desires, your carnal human nature wants you to do, we're drawn away by the lust of the flesh, that act on the parent is preventing you from inquiry into the environment to find out more about you. Something in the environment is calling you. And there in something, someone or something has come in and interfered with that relationship. And therein, that is a direct attack on your creativity. He writes, "We have to work to remove it. When we learn to silence the inner voice that judges yourself and others," that's the conscience, "there is no limit to what we can accomplish individually and as a part of a team." Now, a team is a group of people with a purpose. And what is the purpose today? The purpose is everybody praxis the dialectical process. And by doing so, it becomes groupthink. No longer are you going to be thinking about what God says. See, Mark says, once the earthly family... See, the children are thinking about what parents would say. Rogers says, before therapy, Carl Rogers, Rogerian Psychology, says, before therapy, the child would ask, what would my parents say? But during therapy, in other words, during the dialectical process training, they will ask, what does it mean to me? And so the agenda is to remove this voice from within that prevents man from relating with one another on a global cosmic level. And so he's saying that there's nothing that would be impossible. Isn't that what God said? That nothing would be impossible to them? Now, that's perception. Then he says, this is Michael Ray again, Maslow Management, "Absence of judgment makes you more receptive to innovative ideas." Innovation, see, is change. Innovation is you're changing the way that things are for something new. And then Maslow, this is Jackie McGrath in quoted in Maslow on Management. This is a book that was published in 1998. It has a lot of Abraham Maslow's ideology, his statements, his quotes. He died in 71. But McGrath writes, "Maslow stated that creativity comes from ambiguity, uncertainty, living in the moment, lack of predictability. These qualities cause creativity flow." That's a bunch of baloney. Creativity comes from knowing facts. Creativity comes from knowing what does work and doesn't work, and then you come into a problem and you weigh it out on what doesn't. Einstein came up with E=mc² because he used a biblical standard. In other words, this equals this and does not equal that. 2 + 2 = 4 and cannot be any other number. And then he filled up a room full of blackboards with is and not. And by that process, building truth on truth, he came to know truth. Now, that's not ambiguity. Ambiguity is, well, I think. What do you think? Well, I feel. How do you feel? Uncertainty? No. Now, uncertainty is always inductive reasoning. Deductive reasoning is always certain. Why? You already are working from something. You've been given a law. You then build from that law. There might be things you don't know. If you fly as a pilot, you have to know drag, thrust, lift, gravity. You ignore any of those laws. In other words, you go into a mode of uncertainty, see, that'll put a pilot in stress. You don't know for sure. And your agenda isn't go, well, I think and I feel. Your agenda is to find out what is wrong before you hit an object. And he says, living in the moment, lack of predictability. See, and so this is why we have become one of the dumbest nations on the face of the earth. Well, then he writes, Maslow says, "Who should teach whom?" Now, after he'd done this all his life, he destroyed his family, he destroyed a nation, and then, you know, when you get older, sometimes you start to rethink the stuff you were pushing down other people's throats when you were younger. His children, he said, got me in a conflict with my theory. Who should teach whom, he wrote. I've been in continuous conflict over this. Now, he clearly defines here traditional American education. that his ideology helped develop as an Esalen-type, orgiastic, Dionysian type education. Esalen was Big Sur, California. Nude parties. It was debauchery. Of course, they intellectualized, made it Apollonian because it was an academic thing. But there were drugs, and there were seances. There was witchcraft going on, and kindergarten teachers to high ranking officials and CEOs. They all went there and bonded for the week in some of these sex marathons. And the hippie movement comes out of Esalen. There's a whole bunch of study on this stuff. And of course, the people who go there, for the most part, they'll dignify it because, well, it was man getting in touch with himself, overcoming his barriers and his hostility towards man and getting in touch with his body and the creation. But he said, I've been in continuous conflict. Why? Because he realized when you get to a certain age, maybe these children do need direction and chastening. And then he says history almost universally has dichotomized this higher and lower, see, above, below, the biblical structure, right, wrong, sheep, goats, heaven, hell. But it is not clear that they are on the same continuum. Now, if you get on my website, authorityresearch.com, one of my articles is about two roads. See, God gives us two roads, the straight and narrow and the broad path. Now, when God gives you that straight and narrow, he gives you commands, and he gives you direction. It is not in you to direct your steps. He's the one who directs. In all your ways, acknowledge him, then he's the one who directs your steps. Trust in him with all your heart. Don't lean to your own understanding. He's the one who directs your steps, your paths. Now, there's his direction, and there's the world's direction. The world's direction is eros. His direction is spiritual. But what Maslow's saying, and this is the trickery of the dialectic, they'll say, well, wait a minute, you're just of the past. Because, see, yesterday God gave you that command. We have a situation today. Your feelings and your emotions are now in conflict with the moment because your commands from yesterday are interfering with you being relevant today in changing times. And so, therefore, you just need re-education. You're living in the past, we're in the present, and preparing for the future. So they just moved you over onto one road. And then one road has a continuum. There are those who are behind, and there are those who are catching up, and there are those who are leading. Their leadership. This is leadership training. So leadership training is no longer learning truth from above man. Leadership training is learning to be man and live man and promote man, humanism. And so that's what he's meaning here. History, almost universally, has dichotomized this higher-lower. Absolutely. That's true history. But, they're rewriting history. You notice that? And what this history is we're making it. But he says, it is not clear that they are on the same continuum in a hierarchical integration of prepotency and postpotency. In fact, this is in the church. They talk about pre-Christians. You know? This is really diabolical stuff. And then, as I shared last session, Maslow and Management, he says in his book, salvation is a byproduct of self-actualization. Only your duty to society saves you. And this is in the church growth. If you're not doing the church growth stuff, it's excommunication without writ, but in essence, you're not saved. You're not worth talking to. And then he continues, this is a comment I jotted here, the journals of Abraham Maslow. Now, Lowry edited those, published back in 1979. He says, Maslow says, seeking for personal salvation is always the wrong road to salvation. The only path was the Ikiru path. Salvation via hard work. This is work salvation. Wow, this is socialism. It's work salvation. If you're not working for the village, you can't be saved. And total commitment, that's totalitarianism, to doing well the job, fate, or personal task, destiny called you to do. An important job that called for doing. Oh, man, do you see the slavery in this to Big Brother? Why are you doing what you're doing? Because the village needs you to do it. You're not going to do it for the glory of God, because that's individualistic, that's patriarchy. You're not going to do it for your parents. You're going to do it for the village. Maslow writes, in self-actualizing people, the work they do might be better called mission. Now we're in a religious language. Calling, duty, vocation, in the priest's sense. Meaningful work comes very close to the religious quest in humanistic sense. So this is, again, from Maslow's own writings, and again, used around the world. This is the stuff the UN drools over and pours over and tries to implement in every life around the world, where you try to move over from a strict authoritarian managerial style, in other words, do what the boss tells you to do, to a more participative style, chaos. Wow, he includes that. Hostility, destructiveness may result. Why? Because people who are used to doing what's right and wrong will hold to their position. And, of course, if there's enough push, they will push back. Now, that's the natural man. And so what they had to do was, instead of having this right and wrong, because, see, if you challenge somebody else in face-to-face and you hold to that position, it's more, I just wrote an article on civil disobedience, it's that the dialectic people will treat anybody who thinks didactic is irrelevant. See, that's what Eve did when she said the tree was good. See, once the tree is good, when God says not to eat of it, his command is irrelevant because there's nothing wrong with a tree. So once man determines that he's good, if you come in and say, no, you've fallen in sin, that concept is irrelevant because everybody's saying, no, we're good. I'm okay. You're okay. Now, Douglas McGregor is often referred to in this concept of theory X and theory Y, and then Maslow gets into a, no, I'm the one who comes up with it. But here's a statement he writes. Theory X and theory Y were based on Abraham Maslow. Now, this is an addenda, I think, that by Warren Bennis in his book, Hierarchy of Needs Theory, and are not management styles, but are assumed which play a large role in the development of management styles. Theory X were the traditional patriarchal people. Theory Y are the dialectical transformational people. Those are the people of the world. But Theory X are the people of the past. Remember, to them, it's one road. But God says, you know, Theory X doesn't mean you're on the straight and narrow. Theory X just means you know there's right and there's wrong. You actually have a conscience that God can work with. Then Maslow writes, we must ultimately assume at the highest theoretical level of enlightenment management. Now, enlightenment delivers man from God. In other words, you don't have to do what God tells you to do. If it interferes, it doesn't make sense in the given time. That's situation ethics, values clarification, all kinds of educational structures were built on enlightenment thinking. So management now is to be enlightenment and theory. In other words, it's not directed from above by any authority outside. All authorities of God, any authority outside of the creation, it is now simply man directing himself to creating a better world. And so he's saying, what is guiding society? It's a preference or a tendency. Now, John Dewey and others called it mimesis. In other words, there's something that is driving us to thinking, to reasoning. And what that is that the environment stimulates in our bodies through the touch, taste, sight, smell, sound, through the senses, approach, pleasure, avoid pain. There are chemical responses in our body to whatever the environment stimulates in us. And then the mind becomes aware of that. And in the case of pleasure, your body is designed, it's wired to approach pleasure. And so you naturally, carnal man, look into the environment. What created this pleasure? Because you want more of it. And so there's a tendency, see, we're drawn away by the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. So that's our tendency. That's the law of the flesh. And so he's saying enlightenment management theory is built on this. If you want to unite the world on what we all have in common, that's your platform. All that's of the world, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Now, they're not lust if there is no God. See, they're not lust if there is no parent. They're just natural human felt needs. He writes, Maslow says, to identify with more and more of the world, moving toward the ultimate of mysticism, a fusion with the world, a peak experience, cosmic consciousness. Self-actualizing people have to a large extent transcended the values of their culture. See, culture comes when the parent gives children their traditions And then those traditions are carried on in to the next generation because of the parents inculcating. And so if I get your child in my classroom, I allow him to share his dissatisfactions to you, restraining him from doing his natural inclination, then I am delivering him from the culture that you have raised him up in. Now, I'm not saying culture is necessarily a good thing, but all cultures carry within them cannot, must not, thou shalt not. They carry an up, top, down, right, wrong, black, white, sheep, goats, biblical structure. That's why you can take the gospel into all ethnos, all races, all cultures. But see, Mark said, once you realize that traditional home produces culture, and God produces culture, of course, his culture is holy and pure and righteous, that once you realize this chastening and this right and wrong way of thinking is preparing the next generation to understand God, then the traditional home must be annihilated. So if you can get all cultures together, get them to put aside the negative, this, in other words, this is my land and not your land, they can say this is my land, but they can't say not your land, you get rid of borders. You get rid of culture. It's called a culture war. That's how it's done. They are not so much merely Americans. Now, he's talking about the students in our classrooms today, as they are world citizens. You go to college, Christian college as well, you study Maslow, you incorporate his thinking into your life, and you have just circumvented, made irrelevant a constitutional republic. Nobody told you that. You just don't think that way anymore. It's been washed from your brain. So when he says they are not so much merely Americans as they are world citizens, members of the human species, first and foremost, we have to study, he writes, the conditions which maximize ought perceptiveness. Now, I've shared in prior programs about the dialectic. The language goes like this. The thesis traditional patriarchal languages is a not. I'm the parent, you are not. I am God and you are not. This is right and that is not. See, you can eat all these trees, you cannot eat of that tree. So there's a contrast. Now, when you're told that and you want to relate with something, and you try to get that person to put aside the not, because with they cannot, you only have two choices, obey or disobey. So if you can get them into dialogue, because they're not dialogue, they're teaching and preaching, but if you can get them into dialogue, then it's why? Why can't I go out? You're not wanting more information, you're just wanting them to change their preaching and teaching to dialogue, which is an opinion. Well, it's just how I feel and think. And if you can get them to say, I feel and I think, you moved them away from I know. My people destroyed for lack of knowing. Why? Because they all went to I feel and I think. They all practiced theory. They all practiced opinion. Because they weren't grounded on the Word of God, which is not by private interpretation. It's not by your opinion. It is God-breathed. And so if the child then can't move you because you stop the dialogue with because I said so, because I'm the parent, because I'm the law, because the legislators can do whatever they want, but you say, well, wait a minute, you can't make law. The citizens must come to you and make law. And you're the one who has to then vote instead of letting the president do executive orders and the court system make law. It's total tyranny what's been going on. But it's because we have rejected a patriarchal paradigm for generations. Then he writes, so now if you can't get your own way because the parent stops dialogue with because I said so, you talk to yourself, your best friend. Cursed is a man who trusts in man. The best friend you have is yourself. That's why in traditional education, you control yourself, you deny yourself, God says, you humble yourself. But in this case, you talk to yourself. And yourself is always in agreement with whatever in the environment stimulated pleasure. And so when you can't say to your parents, well, I feel and I think, you talk to yourself. You go, well, I ought to be able to go out. Remember Eve said, nor touch it. I ought to be able to touch the tree. Every time she went by the forbidden tree, something in her wanted to touch that tree, and she couldn't do it, but the ought to be was there. So he says, oughtiness is itself a fact to be perceived. That's your feelings to tie with the creation that's been intercepted, which is a description of neurosis. So the only pathway out of neurosis is to get you to share your ought to be. Created a healthy environment, quote unquote, where you feel you are free from judgment from the parent, judgment from God, so you can share your dissatisfaction to their restraints in your life. That's all right, that's all Freud did. Put you on a couch, get you to share about your dreams in early childhood, and there your ought to be's came out. And so now feelings have to be treated as a fact, to have to be perceived. So that's all counseling is today. Well, how do you feel? What do you think? By the way, Jesus didn't ask anybody how they felt or what they thought. God will not. From Genesis to Revelation, it's not. The discussion is never. The presentation is never, how do you feel? What do you think? God says, it is written. That's the message of the Word of God. But Maslow says, oughtiness. This, well, I oughta, shoulda, mighta, coulda. This spirit of rebellion is to be treated as a fact, to be perceived. In other words, looked at like a laboratory. It has to be observable, repeatable. If we wish to permit the facts to tell us their oughtiness, here's where he goes now. We've rejected God's paradigm, so what do we have? We must learn to listen to them in a very specific way, which can be called Taoistic. Wow, we're into Eastern religion. Enlightenment economics, this is Maslow going on with him, must assume in a prerequisite synergic institutions. Now, remember I shared synergy last week. It's just the energy you can measure of compromise for the sake of team building. But now all institutions are built on a synergistic system set up in such a way that what benefits one benefits all. Oh, that sounds like what's going on today in our government. One for all and all for one. Enlightenment management and humanistic supervision can be a brotherhood situation. The more enlightened the religious institutions get, see, he's building, that is to say, the more liberal they get, this is the foundation for church growth, emergent church, the greater will be the advantage for an enterprise run in an enlightened way. In other words, we have delivered ourselves from God's authority. We have a new God. God's working with us. God's in the brotherhood. God's dialoguing with us. We can experience God. We can discover God, and God can discover us, and we can all go down this broad path, skipping together to world harmony and global peace with God's assistance. Now, my latest article on my website, authorityresearch.com, on civil disobedience explains this dialectical tie of man and God for social cause. It's called civil disobedience. And the effect, by the way, was direct destruction of the home. Now, I'm running out of time. We'll pick up on the other side of these messages. My name, again, is Dean Gocher. I encourage you to get on my website, authorityresearch.com. Check out the messages or the articles on the website. In fact, I'm being censored from the marketing companies out there simply because of I'm too extreme. Unfortunately, I just read the liberals' books. They get mad at me. It's not that I'm wrong. I've read their books. They're in love with these guys. And I just show them that these guys were losers and they're following the same path. For some reason, they don't like to hear that. Well, again, we'll pick up on the other side of these messages.